think about this lesson today, Campbell?
Well, it looks very interesting to me. I never thought about the idea of having life under the ice, but it will be exciting to learn of how they discovered this.
Right. Well, we're glad that you can join us today, and we're glad to have Amanda with us. Amanda, doesn't this seem like kind of some subject you would study in a science class in high school or college?
It does. It does sound like that maybe in your biology class or geography class. I'm interested because Antarctica is very close to my home. It's just below New Zealand, so I've always had a fascination about what is happening in Antarctica or what is under Antarctica.
Mm. Well, that's true because, you know, Amanda is from New Zealand, which is a beautiful place. And I always think about the Antarctica and the penguins and the life of the animals that are down there. But we're going to go under the water, under the ice today, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. And we're going to learn more about what scientists have found there.
That's true. So even though this lesson might not seem that relevant to a lot of us who are doing our regular daily jobs, it's kind of nice to dig into a little bit of scientific subjects now and then, don't you think?
Yeah. I think it's good to keep your brain going, you know, to look at something different can exercise your brain.
That's right. So you can learn new things find out about new discoveries around the world.
Well, you know, usually we tell everybody, now you can discuss this with your friends, but I think if most of you in advanced class say, how would you like to talk about microbial life that's under the Antarctic ice sheet, they would say, what?
Yeah.
You know, what's the matter with you? You know, it's not the subject that we usually talk about.
Probably right. Not over dinner, right?
Not over dinner, not. But it's kind of something nice to read about. And, you know, this word microbial that we start out with here, it's not a word we usually use. We talk about microchips. We talk about micro things and microbes and everything. Well, so let's talk about more about microbial things. What does that mean?
Well, the prefix micro, M-I-C-R-O, just means something that's very, very small. So we talk about microchips or small chips. And so microbial life is just life that's very, very, very tiny. It's so small that we can't see it with our unaided eyes. We often need a microscope to be able to see it.
Okay, they talk about micro, which is small, and then we talk about this word nano, because there's nanotechnology. Mm-hmm. I think that's even smaller. Mm-hmm. We get into these things that are so small, they have to have new words for them.
Right.
That's right. The smaller we go, the more words we need to come up with.
That's right. To find out, to say what it is. But we're talking about the kind of things that might have some kind of life. Now, when you talk about life, I think about people usually and animals, but there's more life than that.
Sure, yeah. You have plants, and we have what we're talking about today, microbes, and these are single-celled organisms that are so tiny that we can't see, but they have life as well.
Right. We talk about life having organisms, but there's living organisms and plants and things in the ocean, mm-hmm. and the, you know, in the earth. So we're going to talk about life, not only people's life, but the life of organisms, aren't we?
Right, we are.
So get ready for that, right? So this article then, we're going to start reading it. It's on page 22, and I think what we should do is just take the first 11 lines and go over those.
Microbial life found half a mile below Antarctic ice sheet. In an icy lake half a mile beneath the Antarctic ice sheet, scientists have discovered a diverse ecosystem of single-celled organisms that have managed to survive without ever seeing the light of the sun. The discovery, reported in the journal Nature, is not so much a surprise as a triumph of science and engineering. The research team spent 10 years and more than $10 million to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that life did indeed exist in subglacial lakes near the South Pole.
Well, there are a lot of interesting things to discuss here and explain, but I like this last sentence where what I was thinking about this research team. How long did they spend researching this?
10 years.
10 years. How much money?
$10 million.
Can you imagine 10 years studying the microbes and things like that? Oh, seems like a long time to me.
Yeah.
10 years. And they were trying to prove something. What were they trying to prove?
They were trying to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that life did exist in the South Pole. Mm-hmm. Now, when we're talking about beyond a shadow of a doubt, it means that you cannot prove it wrong. It's right. absolutely correct.
So right. when you're sure that it's true, that there is no question, when you have a question about something, it makes a shadow on it. It's not certainty.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But there's no uncertainty. This is certain mm-hmm. that there's life. Now, they're trying to prove that there's life in this subglacial lakes. What is a subglacial lake?
Okay, well, we know about the glaciers. The glaciers are ice formations on the poles. When we see the word sub, that just means something that's under. So it's a lake that is underneath the glaciers in the South Pole.
All right, now Amanda said she's kind of interested because it's not too far from New Zealand. But I was just thinking about it, you know. Yeah. If they're going to spend all this time and all this money to prove that there's some kind of life in the lakes in the South Pole, you know what I might say? Who cares? I mean, you know, to me, I would say that. To them, they would say, oh, of course, that's very important.
Absolutely.
Right.
I think
but, you know,
their
ordinary people wouldn't say, well,
right.
you know, does it really matter?
Not unless we know how it's going to work for us, perhaps in everyday life or in our own lives. Finding out this kind of research, how will it change our life?
That's right. So that's why we have to find out this, you know.
Right.
It's not just that, you know, really, so there's life in the subglacial lakes. Mm-hmm. Does it affect us any? Mm-hmm. Does it prove anything? Does it help us? Mm-hmm. So that's what we're trying to search for the answers, aren't we?
Sure.
We are. And I think that just talking about glaciers and subglacial things, I know that the glaciers are melting in different places around the world, including New Zealand and other parts of Scandinavia. And what people are finding underneath that are is life forms like microbials that can be helpful. I have soap in my house that has microbials in it and supposedly helps make your skin brighter and glow more. So I do think that they are trying to find ways to make it practical in our everyday life.
I'm glad to know that because that makes it more worthwhile, doesn't it, to study it?
Yeah, and microbes are important to our lives. You know, we do need microbes in order to survive, and I think microbes play a bigger part in our lives than we think.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, and we don't usually think about them. So we're going to take today to think a little bit more about these single-celled organisms that we call microbes. Mm-hmm. And there's so many of them, we'll find out that later. But they survive without seeing the light of the sun. Mm-hmm. Now, the sun is what gives life to things like plants and trees, and all of us, we all need the sun.
Mm-hmm.
But what about when there's no sun?
Well, that's the interesting thing, that these microbial life forms don't need the sun to survive. So that's why they also want to know more about it.
That's right, because usually the sun is what gives us the energy, but these microbes do give energy to all of the other organisms that are there. So without them, they wouldn't be able to exist. So they help out where there's no light.
That's right. So we find out that this discovery was reported in the journal Nature, and for them, they say it's not so much a surprise as a triumph of science and engineering. So in a way, they kind of expected to find life there. They weren't so surprised that there was life there, but they were able to celebrate the fact that they were able to discover it.
Mm. It's true, and you know, this is a triumph not only for science, but for the engineering to be able to get down to them, get through the ice. That's mm-hmm. an engineering thing too, isn't it?
It is, because the ice is very solid, so they had to make sure that the drills that they would use were able to withstand that impact, and they were able to do that.
So we're finding out that there's little tiny organisms, maybe not very many cells, mm-hmm. single-celled, but they can survive without the sun. And we say, well, how can anything survive? These microorganisms can do this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have their ways.
So they've proved that. So let's find out a little bit more about it. And we're going to find out what this man, John Prisco, has. He's one of the lead scientists on the project. So let's read to the bottom of that column.
John Prisco, the lead scientist on the project, has been studying the Antarctic for 30 years. He published his first paper describing how life might exist in the extreme environment beneath the ice sheet in 1999, and has been looking for definitive proof ever since. After spending millions on a drill that could bore a clean hole free of contaminants through the ice sheet, he and his team had just 4 frenzied days to collect the water samples that would prove whether his theories were right or wrong.
Can you imagine 30 years studying that? Oh, my. He's an expert, isn't he?
Yeah,
he
is. That's dedication.
Right.
And I know the conditions down in Antarctica aren't that comfortable. It's very, very, very cold down there. And
not many people down there.
Yeah, it's very hard to survive. So to be able to be down there for that long.
Well, he probably goes back and forth and studies, right?
It takes a lot of dedication.
Well, he published a paper on that. What was his paper about that he published?
He described how life might exist in extreme environments beneath the ice sheet. And that was already in 1999 that he published that. So he already had the thought, perhaps there is life that exists underneath the ice.
Right. Since we're talking about science, one scientific term that they use is a hypothesis. A hypothesis is a guess. So he had a hypothesis about the fact that there might be life underneath the ice.
And but everybody else had to say, prove it.
Right, and so he spent 30 years proving it.
Yeah, he's been looking for this definite proof. Mm-hmm. Definitive means something quite, you know, without a shadow of a doubt.
That's right.
So he's proved it then. So that's very good of a triumph for him. Most of us didn't even know that was going on. But what did they have to do that?
Well, they had to look for definitive proof. And definitive proof means the very best, the conclusive, the most absolute proof they could possibly find.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Right. Well, it costs a lot of money, though.
That's right. They spend millions on a drill that could bore a clean hole free of contaminants through the ice sheet. So a drill is just something that makes a hole. And when we talk about boring, we mean
drilling
mm-hmm. down into the ice. And they want a hole that's free of contaminants. And a contaminant is a substance that makes something less pure or makes it poisonous.
I didn't realize that drilling, you know, would have these contaminants, but I guess usually when people drill, there's chips or things that go out
sure.
and might spoil something.
And
like
oil,
right?
You know, they put oil on the drill to make it move better. So they need to make sure, because, I mean, these contaminants could easily kill the life that's there. So they want to make sure that there are no contaminants that would affect their results.
Most of us would never even think of that, would we? We'd drill down there and see what happens, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, we don't think about that.
They had to think about all those things, right?
I think it's interesting that it goes on to say that he and his team had just 4 frenzied days to collect the water samples. And when we say the word frenzied, we think of something happening very excitedly, uncontrollably, and sometimes very violently. But 4 days, you know, he spent 10 years on this, and then he only has 4 days to collect the samples that he needs. That is not a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't prove it, why then they'll say, well, that's just a theory. So he was determined that he could prove it. And he knows he has only that period of time, so I'm sure it was a very anxious time for him and his crew, don't you think?
That's right. So they worked very quickly, and they worked as best as they could to collect the samples that they needed to get the information they wanted.
So what we're going to find out now, without going through all that, all we have to do is read this.
Yes.
And he found out, he and his team reported something pretty interesting. And now we get to find out about it. Let's read the rest of the article.
Priskiw and his team report the discovery of close to 4,000 species of microbes growing in the cold, dark environment of subglacial Lake Willens in western Antarctica. Each quarter teaspoon of lake water had about 130,000 cells in it. The pressure of the slowly moving ice above the lake grinds the underlying rock into a powder, liberating the minerals in the rock into the water. and making them accessible to the microorganisms living there, explains Brent Christner, lead author of the Nature paper. The microbes act on those iron, ammonium, and sulfide compounds to create energy. The findings have major implications for the search for life outside of Earth, especially on the moons of Enceladus and Europa, where scientists believe a thick icy crust covers a vast internal liquid ocean.
So now, we're going to find out about these discoveries that they took so long for. And I was surprised. Were you surprised to find out how many kinds of microbes were there?
Yeah, 4,000 species were growing in the cold.
4,000? That's, how can there be 4,000 different kinds?
That's right.
It's amazing, isn't it? And then how did they categorize all those species?
Exactly. See, the thing is, we have to remember, it's not 4,000 microbes, it's 4,000 species. So now, within each species, there's probably millions and millions of each of those species.
Mm. And of course, they would collect this and then go and use their laboratories later. They didn't do the laboratory work there,
right,
but they collected it. They had these few days to collect all that, and then they did the lab work on it, didn't they?
Right, later. That happens later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they found that not only were there 4,000 species, but also each quarter teaspoon of lake water had about 130,000 cells in it.
So that's like one teaspoon has 520,000 cells in it?
Mm-hmm.
That's just in one teaspoon.
Do you want to drink that water with all that? Sounds scary, but, you know.
Well, thing is, probably the water we drink does contain several microbes in it. We don't think about it.
I'm going to think carefully before I drink water.
Some of them are good for us.
Yes, need some microbes in our body.
But just think of that these were things they could identify, that these were different.
Right.
Single cells, but they still had some function,
yes,
which shows us that there's so many things in this world that are just so wonderful that we don't know about. You know, when mm-hmm. God made the heavens and the earth and all the people and all the plants and the animals, he had all that great design. His computer is much better than anything we'll ever have.
Right? So much detail.
How yes. much detail that we don't even know about.
That's
exactly.
Right.
We're just taking years and years to find out and new equipment to find out.
Yeah.
So this is really something that you might say, did you know that there's 4,000 species of microbes down there in this lake? And they're going to look at you and say, what? What are you into now? It's kind of interesting to know anyway.
That's right. So yeah. These 4,000 species of microbes, they grow in the cold, dark environment of subglacial Lake Willens.
And you can see a picture on here where that is.
That's right. Yeah. We find out from the sidebar there that Lake Willens is the first lake to be sampled in Antarctica, and it's a shallow lake about 6 feet deep. And
that's not very deep, six feet.
No.
And about 37 square miles in size.
Nice.
Yeah. Priskiew compares it to the lakes you might see in the Mississippi Basin, with rivers running through it and bringing some of the lake water out into the Indian Ocean.
So that gives you just some kind of a background about the lake and mm-hmm. how it works and everything. But that's where they went to take these species. That's where they're working. Now, it was pretty interesting of what the pressure of this ice does. You don't think about the ice. You know, ice is on the water and there it is.
Right.
But it's doing something when it's sitting on the water.
Right. It's grinding. It says the lake grinds the underlying rock into a powder. So you can imagine the pressure is so hard that it's grinding the rock down into a powder.
Mm.
It's very strong.
That's right.
Better than my blender.
I never thought about that, right?
Right, and this is actually how these microbes are surviving, because the grinding actually liberates minerals in the rock into the water, and this makes it accessible to the microorganisms living there.
So where does the rock come from then? Is that the bottom of the lake or the side of the lake or the rocks are in the lake or what?
It sounds like the rock is underneath the glacier.
Yeah.
So then the glacier is rubbing on the rock and then mm-hmm. there's bits of the rock coming off, and this is what the microorganisms feed off of.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting though?
Very interesting. And this is explained by Brent Christner, and he is the lead author of the Nature paper, which is where this report was published.
Right.
So if you want to learn more, you can go to their website. And it's interesting that the microbes act on the iron, ammonium, and sulfide compounds found in that powder to create energy.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even need the sun to release that now.
Right, because they can get their energy from these
microbes.
Yeah, from the iron, the ammonium, and the sulfur.
So that's kind of another thing that we don't usually even think about, what's going on in the world.
Well,
we're working and doing our job while these little microbes are down there working, doing their job.
Right, that's right. Yeah, so we find a really complex ecosystem down there, and this is really interesting. I just want to point out one quick thing about the word sulfide.
Mm-hmm.
We see here it's spelled S-U-L-P-H-I-D-E.
Right.
This is actually the British spelling of the word sulfide. In America, it's spelled S-U-L-F-I-D-E. So it's the same word, just so you can be aware.
So whoever wrote it, they were using the British spelling.
That's right.
Do you use the British spelling down there in New Zealand?
We use the British spelling.
Mm-hmm. That's why. See, so it's kind of nice to know the differences here. Well, now what we wanted to know when we started this lesson was what difference does it make? So it says these findings might have something to do with implications for this search that they're having all over for some kind of life outside of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's right.
And life cannot just mean people, but it can also mean plants and microsystems, right?
That's right. I think there's always been an area of science where people have been fascinated with extraterrestrial life. ET, right? So we're talking about life outside of the Earth. And so here we're talking about two moons. One is called Enceladus, and that is a moon of the planet Saturn, and Europa, which is a moon of the planet Jupiter.
So it says scientists think that there's a thick icy crust that covers all of this, and inside of these planets is a big liquid water internal ocean.
Right, because when they've taken satellite pictures of Enceladus and Europa, it appears that it has an icy crust. And so I think they also have the hypothesis that there is life under those icy crusts, perhaps more microbials like we're seeing here in Antarctica.
Mm-hmm. So when you hear about all these spacecrafts that are going around, there's in the year of 2005, the Cassini spacecraft, they started to fly very close to this Enceladus, and they found out more about the environment. So before that, they didn't know much about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that there was some kind of things that had to do with water and the regions and geysers of jet water. And they thought, where does that water come from?
Right.
And that was in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
But then later on, in 2010 and 2012, the same spacecraft passed within 100 kilometers of that. And they went over the southern hemisphere and all around, and they found out more about this. So they're kind of excited about it. They said, well, maybe there's some kind of, you know, microbial life there.
Right. We continue to be curious about what else is in our solar system and what similarities we have with other planets, and also what can we learn from the other planets.
That's right.
Well, that's true, yeah. It's interesting that these planets have their moons, just like we have a moon, different ones. And, of course, Jupiter's moon, Europa, it doesn't look like it'd be a very good place for life, because they found out that that place has some kind of that would be dangerous to people, that we couldn't go there, and explain that because it's actually got high radiation levels.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well.
So because of the radiation levels, they can't do much there.
Right, so it's hard for us to go there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's getting kind of way outside.
Outside of Earth.
So we do see the implications here that, again, we're studying about life under the ice in Antarctica.
Mm.
So I think the next probably step that many scientists will take is to see, okay, well, how does this apply to other planets and other moons and other places in our solar system with similar environments?
Well, we've heard about they're even trying to do things yet about Mars, which is closer, and they haven't been able to get samples even from Mars, which is much closer than Europa.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, who knows when that might happen. But this makes all the scientists think about, what about these other places where there's lakes on other moons and planets? And
right.
It's kind of a big field to think about.
That's right.
But today we're just going to concentrate on the fact that they did get samples from this place, and they're investigating them, and they're checking it out and seeing how it affects things. You said that they even use that for makeup sometimes, some of these things.
Right. The glaciers that have been melting, they found that the dirt underneath the glaciers were full of microbial life, and that they can be useful for enhancing the skin. So I think that's just one possibility. I'm sure that there are many. You know, we mentioned that there are some microbials that are good for our bodies.
Yes.
Internally and externally. Mm-hmm. So I still think it's an ongoing science that they're discovering.
Right.
Well, you might get some face cream that says it's got this in it. Who knows?
I never know.
Check out the labels.
Yeah,
yes.
Have you been using it? Your skin looks great.
Yeah, right. No wonder she looks so good. She's been getting those from New Zealand.
That's
right.
Right.
Well, it's an interesting article, and we know that these things will eventually have something to do with products that we use, and mm-hmm. it's kind of nice to know where it all comes from. So if somebody says, oh, this is good for your face, you say, well, I wonder if that came from this microbial life that's down there,
right.
And they're going to be surprised at all you know because you studied advanced, right?
That's right.
Okay, well, when you come back tomorrow when Newsworthy, we have another kind of a subject. This has been a different subject, and thanks for being with us today. And Amanda and Campbell, thank you for coming.
Of course.
And we invite you back tomorrow as we continue on Newsworthy.
All right, see you tomorrow.
And we invite all of our people who are listening in, wherever they are, to be with us. Have a great day today.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.